My name is Thomas Binder. I want to thank you for spending this last session with me. And let's get into that. It's really simple. So media is complex. Well, it's simple, it's complex. Media is complex. And we want to talk about today, what is the problem? Why is it so complex? What do we need to address? But good news, it's not only complex, there's a solution. So we're going into the solution, and then we are going to see the solution in action. And then finally, we will talk about different call flows to understand if we have media connections, media flows from a server or a client, or a client to a client, or a service to the client. How does this work? How do they flow? Where do I see it happening? And how can I troubleshoot it? Before we start, a little bit about me. My name is Thomas Binder. I said that already. I live in Austria, in Vienna. I joined Microsoft in 2007. I started as a local consultant in Microsoft Consulting Services. About 5 years later, I moved to a team that was at that point called the Center of Excellence for Voice, probably, or Unified Communication. We kept changing the name a lot, so it's difficult to keep track. But then I was in this global team, still in MCS, and then finally 2 years ago, I joined the product group, and now I work on readiness. So if you have seen any sessions, and I hope you did, on the Skype Operations Framework, I worked on the Skype Operations Framework, helped to review a lot of the content and the trainings that we are starting following Monday. You can find them on skypeoperationsframework.com/academy. I'm behind that. I help the presenters to create their content, and I coordinate the deliveries. In my free time, well, to be honest, since I have a daughter, she's now two, you can see her here, there is no free time. But if I'm not working, well, I'll spend my time with her and enjoy that very much. A little bit about this session. So it's limited to media scenarios. So I'm assuming that you all already know how clients communicate via SIP to each other, how the signaling flows. We will touch that a little bit, but it's not the focus to explain that. So we are really looking just on how does the media travel from one point to the other, how do they find out, how they can find each other and reach each other. We will talk about the server. So if you have Skype for Business on premises, we will talk about the service. So if you have Skype for Business online and hybrid, if you have both of them. You will realize throughout the session that the concepts are exactly the same for all these three scenarios. The details may vary a little bit. I will point out if a specific scenario is exclusive to server or service or hybrid. There might be some, but still the details, the concepts are the same, the technology is the same. So can we get the clock, please? Thank you. So the concepts are the same. So if you're online and I'm talking about server, hold on, it won't be for very long, and it's still important to understand these concepts. So what you should already know, you should understand how we do the signaling, you should understand the SIP protocol, how the messages flow, you should understand real-time protocol, ideally, and you should understand the Skype for Business server roles, including the service and the topologies that we have. Because all of that, I don't want to explain, and I'm not going to explain. We will just build on that knowledge. Couple of terms and acronyms that I'll be using throughout the session. So server, whenever I say server, I'm referring to the servers that you on-prem, that you deploy on-premises. Might be in a data center with someone who runs that for you, maybe your own data center, but it's really Link Server 2010, Link Server 2013, or Skype for Business Server 2015. Whenever I say service, then I'm thinking about Skype for Business Online, our Office 365 offering from Microsoft. So now the more media-related things. I will talk a lot about candidates. And a candidate is always a combination of an IP address and a specific port, and it's a candidate that we might send or receive media traffic to or from. ICE, that's the Interactive Connectivity Establishment. STUN, it's called Simple Traversal of UDP through NET. That was actually the old name. Eventually, people found out we can use it also for TCP, so let's get rid of the UDP in the name, and let's call it now Session Traversal Utilities for NET. And TURN, Traversal Using RelayNet. All of these things will be explained in detail during the session. So let's start with the problem statement. Why is it complicated, or what are we trying to fix here? So we're starting here with the server, but as said, concepts apply to service as well, and we will have a slide on the service coming up next. So let's say we have Alice and Bob. And Alice and Bob, these are just two PCs, or phones, or Macs, or whatever they are. They are somewhere in the internet, and they want to talk to each other. And this is not super specific now to Skype for Business. That's just really, how can these two people talk to each other? Well, first of all, they need to know where to find each other, that they exist. So they need to have some kind of signaling. And that's easy. So we put in a server, we call it the registrar. This is where the clients can sign into and register. Well, if this is the server, then probably it's in your data center. So there are firewalls in between. So let's say we have a SIP proxy in between. And now Alice can sign in, Bob can sign in, they can signal to each other. And if now Alice wants to send a message to Bob, they can just send it via the SIP proxy to the registrar and it will go to Bob. They can also signal to each other that they want to establish a call. So Alice wants to call Bob, they establish an audio call. Well, looks easy enough so far. The problem is, most likely Alice and Bob don't have public IP addresses, or they have some network devices that do some filtering, apply some security. While this is great for the security of Alice and Bob, it might mean that these NAT devices or firewalls or whatever they have, access points, they are blocking this connection. So that's not great because now Alice and Bob cannot talk to each other. There's also Charlie. Charlie sits in the data center or in the internal network. Let's hope he doesn't sit in the data center. He sits in an office connected to the internal network, so he directly connects to the registrar, and Alice wants to talk to Charlie. Well, again, we have these firewalls, so they won't talk to each other. And then there's also Dan. He's sitting in a different office, but they are all in the same network, Charlie and Dan, and they want to have a call, and they want to have that as direct as possible. So these are basically the challenges if we're talking about the server. If we talk about the service, pretty much the same. There's Alice, there's Bob. They want to talk to each other, so let's have a registrar. We have it in the cloud. So they connect to Office 365. They can now exchange signaling. However, when they try to establish a call, when they want to talk to each other, send a file, have a video, share desktop, well, again, these network devices might block them from doing so. Then we have Charlie. He sits in the internal network of your company. For simplification reasons, I have just here a single firewall, but that might be the internal and external, or however it is built. And, well, Charlie registers as well, works fine enough. We open this specific port to the known service, because we know what IP address it will have. But between Alice and Charlie, most likely all traffic will be blocked. And there's Dan again, and Dan wants to talk to Charlie, so we need to get sure that Dan can talk to Charlie. And at the same time, we don't want to send this call to the internet. We want this call to stay in the internal network because both users are in the internal network. And if they are able to talk to each other directly, well, then they should. So, summary of the challenges, or going into more detail, actually. Challenge one, the NAT device, network address translation. So you might have a specific NAT device at home, or your wireless router just does that. And in general, network address translation is something great because you have one public IP address, you have your internet service provider gave you this access point, you have one public IP address, and you can connect at home all your devices, all your PCs and your children PCs and your phone and your TV and your Xbox and so on. And they have all these internal IP addresses. It's also great because they can connect over the NAT device to the internet and can send traffic out. The return traffic will come back in, but if someone from the internet tries to initiate traffic, well, that won't work because the NAT device will say, well, you're sending that to my public IP or I don't know where it should go. I don't even know if I want to have that go away. So yes, it provides you security, some kind of security. Yes, it allows you to have a lot of internal IP addresses while you have only a limited number externally, but it will limit the ability for you to establish calls with other people's media sessions. The challenge two is really, and here we are in the server world again, your corporate firewall. Well, actually, in the service, you will have the same issue. So the firewall is there so that external parties cannot just talk to internal users, so that they cannot just connect to your internal resources to your servers. So it's a good reason that they are blocking that. And if you have an alternate inner firewall, it might be that from the internal network, you can talk through the internal firewall to this perimeter network, but most likely you will not be able to talk directly to the internet. And the other way around, from the internet on specific ports that you configured, you might be able from the internet to talk to your perimeter network, but then pretty much you would block everything that wants to go directly to the internal network, because that's why you have these firewalls. So for signaling, we already spoke about that. There's a simple solution. We put in the SIP proxy. So everything goes over the SIP proxy to the registrar, and that's basically pretty static. So I connect over the SIP proxy to my registrar, send all my traffic there. Of course, we could do the same for media traffic as well, have a traffic and just send all the traffic there and have him proxy it. But then again, if I have Charlie and Dan, and they are both in the internal network, I don't want to send all this traffic to the internet. If I have two users traveling to a conference, and they are at the conference hotel, the same hotel, they want to establish a call to each other and talk about dinner plans, I don't want all this traffic to go back to my data center if it doesn't need to. If it's possible to have a direct connection, I want to have a direct connection. So we need something better. So this is the summary again. So you can see on the very left side, there's my external user. On the very right side, there's my internal user or server. From left to right, you can see there's the external user, then there's a net device, then there might be an outer firewall, then there's the SIP proxy, then there's an inner firewall, and then there's the internal user. Again, SIP proxy, SIP channel, no problem, they can signal to each other. But when they try to establish a media call to each other, when the internal client tries to talk to the external client, there will be the outer firewall that will block the traffic, there will be the net device that might not allow the traffic, and vice versa, traffic from the external to the internal will be blocked as well. However, there is a solution, so worry not. It is the protocols that I mentioned earlier, ICE, STAN, and TURN. We add what we call the AV Edge server. And while in the service, it's just a cloud to you, obviously we still have these roles. So there is a media relay that will have this function of the AV Edge server. And the AV Edge server does two things. First of all, it helps you to reflect what your public IP address is. That means the following. I'm sitting at my home behind my wireless router. I send a packet to the AV Edge server, and the AV Edge server will, because that's how the net device works, the net device will replace the source address, the IP address where the packet came from, will replace it with the public IP address that the net device owns, and will send that to the Edge server, and then the Edge server will send me back the packet and will say, by the way, if you send me a packet, the incoming address that I see, the incoming IP address, is the following. So this way, I get this reflexive address. I learn from the Edge server what my public IP address is. And depending on how my net is configured, it might be that another endpoint in the internet can connect directly to my net device, and my net device might allow this traffic coming in, and that could help us to have a more direct call. So that's the first thing, this reflexive address. Very important. Now I know how my public address looks like. The other functionalities it has is it will work as a relay if it needs to. So I can connect to the Edge server, and the Edge server will tell me its IP address and will give me candidates, ports, IP address and ports. It will say, well, if you have to, you can use me as a relay. So that means if the direct doesn't work and if the reflexive doesn't work, I can still use the Edge server as a relay. It's not the best solution in a lot of cases, but sometimes it's the only solution, and as soon as it's the only solution, it is the best solution. And we will go into more details, but what we basically discover here are these IP addresses, we discover ports, and ICE, that's the overall protocol called, that helps me to discover all these candidates and exchange them. So the next question would be, okay, now I know there's the problem, now I know there's a solution, but what component in my environment, if I have Skype for Business, is using this protocol ICE? What is an ICE endpoint? And it's really everything that does media. So it's every client that you have, no matter if it's the iPhone client, Android, Windows Phone client, Mac client, Windows client, your Surface Hub, all of them are ICE endpoints. But it's also all the servers, at least the servers that are doing any media. So it's my audio-video conferencing server, it's my front-end server because there are services running media there, like conferencing announcements server. It's my mediation servers. If I have Office 365, well, all these servers, they exist in Office 365 in some form. If I'm doing Cloud Connector, well, the Cloud Connector runs a mediation server. The mediation server is an ICE endpoint. The only exception is the video interop server. So in Skype for Business on-prem, we have a role called video interop server that doesn't do ICE. That also explains why if you're using the video interop server, it will work only for internal users. And this is really about every media that you're doing. It's about audio, video, desktop sharing, application sharing, file transfer. And we'll look into it detail in logs, and we will see that throughout the session. From an ICE perspective, we really don't care what kind of media it is. The edge server doesn't care. The clients don't care. All the packets look similar. The only difference is sometimes we use UCP and sometimes TCP. We'll talk about that. But except for that, media is media. The edge server itself, it's not an ICE endpoint because it's not an endpoint. It's a proxy. It's crucial for ICE because it will help us to discover these reflexive addresses and the proxy addresses, but it will not terminate any media. So let's see how all of that looks in action. Important to understand is that there are five phases of ICE. When you sign in with your client, it's the first phase. That's where we request a token from the so-called media relay authentication service. And what that basically means, during sign-in, my client learns there is an edge server configured, and it learns where the edge server is located or how it can find them. So that happens once during sign-in. But the other four steps, phases, they happen every time when I do a call. The first one is I need to discover where I can be reached. So when Alice calls Bob, she presses the call button in her client. Nothing is sent to Bob yet. There's no signaling telling Bob that he's going to receive a call. What Alice will do first is, or her client, it will look, well, what local candidates do I have? What local IP addresses do I have? And for all the local IP addresses, it will allocate a port and use them potentially later on for media connections. And then it will disconnect to the edge server. From the edge server, it will learn the reflexive candidate and the proxy candidate so that we know what are the other possibilities that we have to communicate. And we collect all of them. And that's the point when we send a packet over with signaling. There's a zip packet going to Bob that tells Bob, hey, Bob, Alice is trying to call you. And here's a list of the candidates, how Alice can be reached. At this point, Bob doesn't send anything back. Bob will do the same. Bob will discover where Bob could be reached. So Bob will collect all the local IP addresses and ports. Bob will talk to its own edge server, will find out its reflexive address, will find out the proxy address. And as soon as it has all of these information, it will send back the information to Alice. Now Alice knows where Bob can be potentially reached. And then they will do connectivity checks, which means basically from every possibility, they will try to connect to every other possibility so that we can find out the optimal media path. Once we have found the optimal media path, we will do the so-called candidate promotion. So we will select the final pair and say, this is how we communicate to each other. So let's look at this first phase. In this case, I have a remote candidate. So there is on the very left side, you can see the endpoint. Then we have an edge server. I've here split out the two roles. So there's the access edge server that's responsible for the SIP traffic. There's the AV edge server responsible for the AV traffic. And then internally, I have the front-end server. So this is a server-centric slide. But if you're using Office 365, Skype for Business Online, it looks exactly the same, only that you cannot look inside. It's just a black box. So if that would be an Office 365 slide, then it would still be an endpoint. There would still be a firewall, but then it would be a cloud. So what's happening there? So first, the endpoint will register. The endpoint will log in. And that's the usual login request, how you do it, zip register, and will get a 200 OK. And as part of the 200 OK and many other packets, but this is what we need to concentrate, there will be the so-called in-band provisioning. The in-band provisioning tells the client how the client is configured. So if you look in the logs, and we'll do that in a second, if you look in the logs, you will see what features is the user enabled for? Can the user do conferencing? Can the user, what ports should the user use? All these kind of things. The one thing that we are interested in is the MRAS URI. So MRAS, again, is the media relay authentication service, and that basically tells the user, for this user, there is an Edge server configured. So what the client is doing next, it will send out a SIP service request and will say, hey, look, this is my identity, I'm tbinder@microsoft.com, please, over the Access Edge, it connects to the front-end server, please get me credentials for the AV Edge server. The front-end server will then send a service request to the AV Edge server and will say, hey, I need credentials for this user. The Edge server will use a certificate that's located on the Edge server, create these credentials, a username and a password, and this will be sent via the SIP traffic back to the user, and now the user gets all the information on what are my credentials, my username and password for this AV Edge server, and where do I find my media relays, where do I find my Edge servers. And this is a very important concept because the Edge server does not know the user. The Edge server does not have access to your Active Directory. It cannot authenticate a user. However, the Access Edge server knows to trust, and well, the whole Edge server knows to trust the front-end server. So basically what we can see here is that the endpoint sends the sign-in request to the Edge server. The Edge server says, well, domain looks okay, so yeah, I'll send that to my front-end server. And then the front-end server authenticates the user. Then the user tells the front-end server, please get me credentials for the Edge server. And because the Edge server trusts the front-end server, it will say, yeah, well, if you tell me to, then I will give you these credentials. And then over the front-end server, we can send it back over the SIP channel to the endpoint. And this is important because media connectivity is a lot about speed. If you want to call someone and the other person picks up, you want that immediately the call is established. And this way, every time now we need to do a call, we can just go to the AV Edge server, we have these credentials, we have the username, we can give it there, the Edge server looks at their certificate, will say, yeah, sure, I created that, come all in and use my stuff. There's also the concept of an anonymous user, and that will happen every time when you invite someone to a Skype for Business meeting, but they are not part of your environment or of a federated environment. So they are joined either with the web app or they can also join with a client, but there's no federation. In this case, it looks very similar, but if you ever look at the logs, you will just see that this inbound provisioning is not happening in the same case. We just send the SIP invite and say, hey, look, I'm supposed to go to this meeting. The front-end server will look up and will say, hey, yeah, this meeting exists. I allow you to go to this meeting and let me talk to my Edge server so that the Edge server can get your credentials, and then the user will get credentials from the Edge server so that this user can connect to the AV Edge server for the media connectivity. Okay, and now we are going to take a look at some of these logs. And what you can see here is the Snooper tool. The Snooper tool is a fantastic tool because it will help you to read the logs that Skype for Business clients and servers are creating. The logs that we're looking at, you could also look at them in pure text view, but then they would be very hard to read. Snooper will help us to do a lot of, it does a lot of highlighting, orders the packets correctly, helps us to understand what packets are same, what SIP packets are part of the same dialogue. And what I did here is really simple. You can try that at home, and I suggest you should. Do that yourself. All I did is I signed in, I called a colleague, and that's all what we are going to look at. What I'm going to do is I will now move here to the Messages tab, and what I'm interested at this point of time is this media relay token, these credentials for my Edge server. So what I'm going to look for is MRAS, M-R-A-S. So I searched for that, and then I should find three results. And that's exactly what we spoke about. The first one being, it's the inbound provisioning. I learned that there is something configured for me. So it's coming in. You can see that here. The direction is incoming. The second one, the outgoing, where I tell the service, okay, great, that there is a server configured. Get me these credentials. And then the 200 okay coming in again, that gives me the credentials. So if we take a look here at the 200 okay, I scroll down, and here on the right side, and that's basically an XML document, so you could also copy and paste it into an XML editor to better look at that. But if we look at this here, then we can see pretty much here a lot of configuration. SIP ports, media ports, video ports, file transfer ports, and so on. You can scroll down and you can find even more, and pin lock. All this is how the client learns what it is supposed to do or allowed to do. What we are interested here is this MRAS URI. And what we really want to check for is it there? Because if it's not there, then it means for this user, there is no Edge server configured. So if you have Skype for Business on premises, look for this, because if it's not there, then you have forgotten something to set up. Probably you didn't specify on the pool that there is an Edge server. If you are in Office 365 and this is not there, then this is really bad. Then Microsoft has really done something wrong. Then you should open a support call and please let us know. I have not seen it yet, but just if you see that, it's really bad. Okay, so now let's look at the second message, the out message. And this is basically now the request. This is the credential request. Let me just expand it here and scroll down. Where I'm telling the server, hey, my identity is tbinder@microsoft.com. I want these credentials for 480. And that's actually minutes. So these credentials will be valid for 8 hours. I said before, this first part happens only once when I sign in. Well, it happens another time after the 8 hours. So if I have a 9-hour workday, then after 8 hours, it will do that again. Okay, and then finally, I look here at the credential response. Let me just expand that before I zoom in. Now I zoom in. Credential response. Here it says this is the credential response. Then I get my credentials. It has a username and it has a password. And both this username and password are created with the certificate that only the Edge server knows. And if I have a pool of Edge servers, all these Edge servers will have the exact same certificate. So it doesn't matter to which Edge server I go for a call. So one Edge server gives me the credentials. The other Edge servers, because they have the exact same certificate with the exact same private key, they will be able to verify these credentials. And then, if I look down here, I can see here media relay twice, and one has the location internet, and then it gives me here this FQDN and ports, and then I have the same here down here, intranet for internal. Because, and this is now, again, specific to server, if I'm internal to the network, to my company network, then I want to connect to the internal interface of my Edge server. So that's where I would go to this intranet location. However, if I'm external, if I'm in the internet, then I will go to the external location. The ports that I'm seeing here are the ports that I will be using to connect to the AV Edge server, so that's 3478 for UDP and 443 for TCP. Okay. So far I've learned, yes, there is an Edge server, and I have learned that if I ask my front-end server, it is able to provide me credentials from this Edge server, and I get these credentials. However, I have not yet connected to this AV Edge server. So this didn't prove that I can connect to the AV Edge server. All it can prove is there is an Edge server configured, and my front-end server can have connectivity. And that's maybe one more thing that I want to show here. So I said, if you don't see the first message, it means that there's no Edge server configured. If you then look at the second message is always the out request. If instead of the third message, you don't get a 200 OK with the credentials, but you get an error message, that indicates that there's some problem between your front-end server and the AV Edge server. Okay, let's move on. So far, we know that we have an AV Edge server configured, and now is the point of time where Alice wants to establish a call to Bob. And this might be, there are two different cases that I want to point out. This is now for audio, video, or video-based screen sharing. All these workloads will be able to use UDP and will prefer to use UDP. However, if not possible, they will fall back to TCP. So what you can see here on the left side is this endpoint. In this case, there's one network card, and there's this firewall, and we're talking to the AV Edge server, and this is the exact same case for server or service. Looks exactly the same. So what the client does first is it discovers all the local candidates. If I have four network cards, or well, let's say I'm connected to the wireless and I'm connected to the wire network, so I have two IP addresses, then we will discover both of them. So we can have multiple local candidates. So we collect that one. And then we send an UDP packet to allocate candidates from the Edge server, and this way we learn two things. The reflexive one, that's in this case B, and in case we need to use the proxy address, that would be C. And we do the same for TCP. And this way, we have now built a list of local candidates that might all be possible to use for communication with Bob. If I'm using RDP-based screen sharing or file transfer, this will work only over TCP, so we will not discover any UDP candidates. So in this case, again, we discover a local candidate. While in the previous case, it was a UDP candidate, the local one, now it's a TCP candidate. Then we will allocate the TCP, send that to the AV Edge server, and have only TCP, so no UDP there. The reason is that file transfer and RDP, remote desktop protocol, based screen sharing, they are both built on TCP. They cannot use UDP. You have to use TCP for those. Video-based screen sharing, we introduced that, I think, over the last couple of months, and it's not in all scenarios yet. We use it in some scenarios. Video-based screen sharing, however, it's just you share your screen, it's a video feed, so it can use UDP as well. So now Alice on the left side knows where she can be reached. Now she needs to send this SSIP packet to Bob. So there's this SIP invite basically telling Bob, hey, I want to call you, and these are the candidates where I think that you might be able to reach me. Then Bob will do the same, the discovery. So Bob discovers the candidates, and Bob sends back a message that we will see as 183 session progress, including all the candidates where Bob thinks that he can be reached. At this point of time, Alice has not picked up the phone. However, we are already establishing media connectivity because, sorry, at this point of time, Bob has not picked up the phone. He was the one being called. So there is no call yet, but in the background, we are already establishing media connectivity so that as soon as Bob decides to pick up, we have already existing media connectivity and can start the call immediately. Otherwise, you would risk, if you would not do that, and we had a version where we did not do that a long time ago, it could happen that you pick up, you say hello, but the other end doesn't hear the hello, and then you have a very awkward conversation because you have basically two people not talking to each other on the phone. Okay, so they exchange these candidates, and then there's another packet, a 200OK SIP packet. This is now where Bob picked up the phone, and now the final candidates are exchanged again, well, or the candidate list is exchanged again, and so they can have the conversation. And we're going to look at that again in the log. So now I'm going to search for candidate. And I can see here a couple of those, and I want to click on the first one. And what you can see here is that I'm sending something out. It's an invite. It goes to Sasha, so this is my colleague Sasha, and I'm going to send him this invite. So let's look at the invite. On the right side, we can see here the content of the SIP message, and there's a lot of interesting information and some quite useful information. One thing that I want to point out is that you can always see the user client that people are using. So when I get messages back from Sasha, I will also be able to see his user agent. And that might, in troubleshooting scenarios, be just good to know, well, does this happen maybe with an older version? Does it happen with a specific version, like it's the Android client or only the Mac client? So you can get this information from here. Also, if I would be talking to a server, I would see here what kind of server it is. So if it's a mediation server or if it's a conferencing server, because again, from an ICE perspective, all these servers, they are just endpoints. We don't care. They do the same. We are doing ICE. So let's scroll down a little bit. And we can see here that we have a specific content type. So this is called the SDP, the Session Description Protocol. Some people, to remember what it does, refer to it as the Self-Description Protocol. And this is basically a package or information that I send to the other peer, that Alice sends to Bob, that describes Alice herself. So I'm me sending the SDP. I will describe to someone what I can do. And I don't want to go into all the details here, but what you can see here is that this is an audio call, so that's important. So we will be doing audio here. If you look here at the M equals audio, that also tells you audio. And then all these numbers, they are codes for different codecs. So basically, what Alice is telling Bob as well is, well, if we are going to talk, these are the codecs that I support. Because, well, it's great if you have network connectivity, but you also need to have a common language, the same codec that you can talk to each other. And then there's this long list of candidates, and let me just close that and zoom in down there again. And this long list of candidates are really now all the candidates that we have seen in the slide before. So let me highlight a little some information. So if you look here at the first column, or second, you can see that both have a one. Because we have pairs of candidates. Candidates always come in pairs, because there's one used for RTP, for the real-time protocol, and one for RTCP, for the real-time control protocol. Then, good information to know, this pair is obviously UDP, because it says UDP here. Then there's a very long number. This is quite hard to read, the very long number, but the very long number tells me the priority. The higher the priority, well, the higher the number, the higher the number, the higher the priority. And we are doing this so that the clients can prioritize the more local candidates. We said that before, if we can do a peer-to-peer connection, we want to do a peer-to-peer connection, so we need to have some kind of priority here. Then I can see here the IP address, and that's really the IP address of this endpoint plus the ports, and then I can see here the type, and the type is host. So the type is what I want to look at to understand these different candidates, local, reflexive, proxy, what are we talking? Host. Okay, host, that's the local candidate. So this is my physical IP address on this machine. So let's look at a different pair. Here we have a type of server reflexive. The server reflexive is when I send my packet to the server and the server sends a packet back and says, oh, by the way, when you send me a packet, I can see this public IP address. And the IP address we are referring to here is this one. So my public IP address in this case was 10.133 and so on, and there are ports. You can also see here that there's the 10.8.3.21, and that's the same as above, because that's where I sent the packet from, so I get this information as well. So there are these reflexive candidates. I can see them here. We just looked at the TCP. There's a UDP as well. And then finally, we have the relay addresses. And if you look at the relay address, this IP address is the external IP address of your AVH server, or if we are talking about Office 365, it is the IP address of our AVH service in Office 365 where others are supposed to connect to. One word maybe, let me just kill that and, oops. So one other thing that you might see if you read this in detail is that there are TCP passive ones and TCP active ones. And then if you pay even more attention, then you might see that there is a TCP passive that has exactly the same IP address and port, and it's both the relay address. So for UDP, because it's stateless, we assume if UDP is going to work, we can send and receive. For TCP, we are not so sure. So if you look at the TCP reflexive address, we know, well, Alice knows that she can send from her reflexive address a packet because that's what she just did. But we don't know at this point of time if she would be able with TCP to receive a packet. Okay, but these are the ports that we are sending out. If you would look at older client versions, then you would see always two sets of these SDPs, one in the old ISV6 format, and that's the newer version, ISV19. But to be honest, I think we introduced using that in OCS 2007 R2, so it's not that new, but in some of the older clients, and well, in some of the scenarios, actually, you will still see that we use a slightly different format, but you should also see the new format there. Okay, now I want to get your attention to the fact that we have here a 183 session progress. And the interesting thing is that we actually get two. The reason behind that is that my colleague Sasha, at this point of time, was signed in at the same time to two clients. We will see in the log that both of them are Windows clients, but that also means that I'll send out my invite to the server, or service. The server or service sends out the invite to all the multiple endpoints that Sasha might be signed in with, and my client at this point of time will establish media connectivity to all of these endpoints, so because we don't know where Sasha is going to pick up, but so that when Sasha picks up, we have media connectivity. If Sasha would have configured simultaneous ring so that his phone would ring at the same time, his phone number, then we would also see here the same coming in, the 183 from the mediation server, because I also need to establish this connectivity to the mediation server in case he picks up on his phone. Finally, if you would look a little bit deeper, you can see here that up there we had these codes where I said these are the codecs that we support. They are here a little bit better explained. So the 104 is obviously the Silk wideband, and then there's, all these codecs that we are using. Okay, now let's take a look at one of these session progresses. So I can see here again the user agent. So Sasha is using here also the Windows client. And I can scroll down here, and now something weird is happening. I just told you that candidates always come in pairs, but there are no pairs, it's just one per line. And this is a change that we did about a year ago, where we want to optimize the media traffic and reduce the number of candidates. So we don't want to use one candidate for RTP and one for RTCP anymore. We just want to use one candidate, but the other end has to support that. When I pressed the button to call Sasha, I didn't know what kind of endpoint he would have. And it might be an older endpoint that still requires this pair of candidate. But if we go back, here, as part of the self-description protocol, SDP, the session description protocol, we can see here a value that says RTCP max, and that tells the other end, I understand multiplexing for RTCP, so let's use that. So if I'm talking to another client that also understands that, and if I scroll down here, looking at Sasha's SDP coming back, I can see here, well, that he also understands RTCP, and that's why I can see here only not the candidates of pairs, but really one candidate per type. But the candidates are exactly the same concept as we just had before. So there's the type host for the local IP addresses. There's the relay for the relay that we're using, having his edge server public IP address. And there are the server reflexive addresses showing me what Sasha's public IP address is. So now I know where I can reach Sasha. And I get that from both the clients. So we could go into more detail and look here also on what's coming in from the other client. But yeah, it's a different IP address. Obviously, he signed in with these two devices at the same time. Apart from that, pretty much the same. Okay. So, fantastic. So I'm calling Sasha. Sasha knows where he can reach me. I know where I can reach him. And the next thing that the clients are going to do are these connectivity checks. So in the connectivity checks, again, we will use all kinds of combinations. So from my local IP address, for my local candidate, I will try to talk to his local candidate. Well, since I'm here in Seattle and Sasha is right now, since I'm here in Atlanta and Sasha is currently at home in Switzerland where he lives, probably the direct connection won't work. But my client doesn't know it. It could also be that he's indeed in the same network, so we're just trying to do that. What we're also trying, what my client will also try to do is to connect directly to his Edge server external candidates, because maybe we can connect there. We will also try to connect to the reflexive addresses that we learned, because maybe we can connect to that. And he will do exactly the same, his endpoint. So all of them are tried against each other. Well, what we're not, when I say all of them are tried against each other, obviously a UDP candidate wouldn't talk to a TCP candidate. And obviously an IPv4 candidate wouldn't talk to an IPv6 candidate, but within these categories, they would try to just talk to each other. They send these special stun packets, which is basically like, hey, can I reach you? Can you talk to me? And then if we can, then they will send a stun response packet, and then we can establish connectivity. And a stop for a candidate stops when we have this bidirectional connectivity established, and then we wait for Sasha to pick up. This is something that we cannot see in the log files, because there's no reason for the client to send us via SIP traffic to the other peer saying, well, we are trying this and that's working, because that's all networking. If you want to see that, if you need to see that, then you need to look at the network monitor. So, candidate promotion. Let's say we have multiple ways how Sasha and I can communicate now. Then we obviously want to take the one with the highest priority, because that's the one where we have the most direct connection. However, it could be, if Sasha is very quick in picking up the phone, that we're using a suboptimal path in the beginning, and within the first about 10 seconds, that we still find a better path and switch to that. So if you're looking at the logs, we need to, it's always recommended if you do this kind of tracing just for the fun of it and you want to create these logs, keep the call open for 10 seconds. Because if you just do the call and kill it, then you might not see this final candidate promotion and then you don't get all the fun. So it is, again, a SIP invite, and the SIP invite has only the candidates that will be used. So it's not the whole list. It's only the 200 OK and the candidates on the optimal media path. And let's just take a look at that. So here's the 200 OK. This is the point of time when Sasha picks up. And at this point of time, thank you. I just showed you something very interesting, and here it is again. So looking here at the 200 OK coming in from Sasha, that's the point of time where Sasha is picking up the phone. So this 200 OK only comes from the one endpoint that he's using now. And looking at the candidates, it's again the full candidate list, because now, so far, we haven't chosen the best candidate. The promotion hasn't happened. But when we look at the next line, there's a message coming out from me to Sasha. I did the original invite. And this is now the re-invite with the final candidates. Whoops. And if I look here, then I can see here there's only one line, because we established that we are doing this multiplexing. And this is what my endpoint is, where my endpoint is being talked to the final candidate. And what's very interesting here is that this is the server reflexive address. So at least my Edge server, I know that at this point of time, is not in the media path. It is being talked directly to my net device or access point or firewall or whatever I have in front of me. So this helps me to understand what the media path is. So looking at the 200 OK for that, I look here again. And now I can see what Sasha's final candidate was. And this is pretty interesting because it's a server reflexive address as well. This means that I'm sitting behind some net device, Sasha is sitting behind some net device, but the traffic goes from me through my net device directly to his net device and to him. So in this media call, there's no edge server involved in the media stream, which means that potentially we can do a much more direct call. As I said, Sasha is sitting in Switzerland. I'm here at the conference in Atlanta. I actually did this about an hour ago. And our edge servers would be in Ireland because we are both European users, but we don't need to go to Ireland. I'll just send it directly to him to Switzerland. Probably it wouldn't be so much a detour anyway, but it's a more optimal media path. So it's more direct, and that's great because it helps me to reduce latency and it helps me to reduce the load on my environment because my edge server doesn't need to care about that. If I look here at the time between the 200 OK and the re-invite, you can see here that's at second 7 and this is at second 13. That means there were 6 seconds between him picking up and us, me sending the final candidate. And that's what I said when, if you test it at home, wait 10 seconds so you can get sure that you see this packet. I want to take a step back as well because I want to highlight also what I can learn here from a troubleshooting perspective. So when the candidates are exchanged, it's very important that this is a complete list. If it's not a complete list, it means that for whatever reason, your endpoint cannot talk to the AV Edge server. I mentioned earlier that when we get these MRAS credentials, that we know that our front-end server and our edge server can talk to each other. We know that for the user, an edge server is configured, but we don't know yet if the user can talk to the AV Edge server. Looking at this, I can say, yes, I know now that my user can talk to the AV Edge server because I can see here that there is, oops, wrong one. I can see here that there is a relay address, a relay candidate with TCP. I can see here that there's a UDP candidate, relay candidate, and I can see here these two reflexive candidates for UDP and TCP. If my client would not be able to talk at all to the edge server, because edge server, the firewall is completely closed, or the FQDN is not discoverable for me, or there is some proxy that doesn't allow me this connection, then I would not see any of those. Then I would just see my local candidates, and that's it. That's not a lot in most scenarios that won't help me. If you have the scenario that you can see, for example, no UDP candidates, but you can see the TCP candidates, that might mean that the UDP ports are blocked that you need, and vice versa. So this is actually the best troubleshooting step, and in most of the cases, I've seen lots of customers who had troubles with setting up edge server or firewall rules against Office 365, and this is the best troubleshooting tool. Because I can see here for both users, for both endpoints, do they have all the candidates? Can they talk to their edge servers? Well, if they can, fantastic, then you have almost one. Then the only thing that could still break, and in a lot of cases that broke as well, can break as well. But if the users can talk to the edge servers, now the only question is, can the edge servers talk to each other? And we'll talk about that in a couple of slides. Okay. So going back. So let's think about the different call flows. So we have here now scenarios where we have, that's the for the scenarios for the topology with the server. It's a little bit different because we have this internal firewall and the external firewall and the internal network and the external network. But let's say we're talking about servers. So what we're having here is we have these two external users, so that might be users traveling, working from home, being at a customer, and we have these two internal endpoints. And again, endpoint could be a server, it could be a user, all of them from an ICE perspective are just endpoints. And we have here our AV Edge server, and the AV Edge server is between these two firewalls, the inner firewall and the outer firewall. The first scenario that we want to look at is both of the endpoints are internal. So these are two users, maybe in the same, maybe in different offices. They want to establish a call. So first, internal user one establishes the call. So we do the discovery. So we discover here this local candidate, indicated, whoops, let me get the power.
the laser pointer indicated here.
So there's a local candidate, and it will talk to its edge server because it's internal. It talks to the internal interface of the edge server on port UDP 3478 and TCP 443, and then it will allocate these ports in the high port range. So now we have candidates, local one, and here on the edge server with the external IP address, these two. The other endpoint does exactly the same. There's a local candidate, and there are external candidates, the relay candidates. So ideally, these two would now just establish media connection directly peer-to-peer, and that's what we want to see. However, if for whatever reason it's not possible, because there's a firewall or there's some misconfiguration in the network, they could still talk to each other via the edge server. In that case, the traffic would travel from the internal candidate to the internal edge interface, then it would go here to the edge server, it would do a hairpin, and then it would go back in. Not a great scenario, because now all your traffic from these two users need to go to the data center where you have the edge server, then you're putting load on the edge server, and this is a little bit simplified because there's only one edge server. It could be that they're using two different edge servers. Now you have even one hop more, so more load, more network consumption, more latency. You don't want to do that. So you really want to get sure that all the internal ports are open so that you can have this internal connectivity. Next scenario, one user inside, one outside. So again, the internal one does this discovery, allocates the port. The external one does pretty much the same. Here we have, again, the local one. Then we have the reflexive ones, because this user is now behind the net device. And then it connects to this port 3478, 443. And then we have these ports here. What the user is trying to do first, or the endpoint actually, it will try to connect directly to the 50K port range of this server. If that's possible, great. If not, then it will also do the hairpin talking to 3478 and 443 and do a hairpin there. And we will have a slide later on that speaks a little bit more about why this is very good if it can talk to the 50K port range. So then finally the scenario where we have two users, both are outside, and the title is wrong here, I apologize. So this user allocating candidates, finding the local one, the reflexive one, the relays one, other user doing the same, local, reflexive, relay. Obviously, if we can talk peer-to-peer, fantastic, let's do that. And that would be a scenario, we are both here at the conference, but you are at the other side of the conference hall and of the conference center, and while I could walk 30 minutes to find you, I will just call you on Skype for Business. If the network allows it, I haven't tested it, but if the network allows peer-to-peer connection, that's what's going to happen, so that's great. If that doesn't happen, maybe we can talk from our reflexive to our reflexive, just as I did with Sasha in the log that we have seen. If that doesn't work, then we can still have connectivity where we both talk to each other's edge server or where the edge server does the hairpin. So it can get a little bit more complicated. Just get your head around it. What are the possibilities for each client? And the combination of that, that will be then our media path. So I talked a lot about server. Let's talk about service. What are the scenarios there? Well, pretty much the same, except as we don't have the concept of internal users because you won't be ever internal to the Microsoft data center. So all the users from an Office 365 perspective are external. So they want to do the call. They discover their candidates. Candidates discovered, and they might want, if possible, they have a peer-to-peer call, direct connectivity. And that's basically, if you have a company, if you as a company deploy Office 365 and you have two users internal to your network, well, they're still external to Office 365, that's why I have the outside-outside quotes there, but they will try, being at the same network, they will establish a peer-to-peer connection. So it is super important that they can do that. If you have firewalls blocking them from doing so, well, then you need to send all the traffic to Office 365. Again, it could be reflexive to reflexive, depending on the network equipment, or it would just go via the edge server. So what happens if two edge servers need to talk to each other? And I mentioned before, if you see all the candidates, the only thing that can go wrong now is that the edge servers cannot talk to each other. So it's super important that if you have an edge server, if you have server or hybrid, that you configure them correctly so they can talk to the internet, to other edge servers that you want to communicate to, might be Office 365 edge servers or other companies you federate with. So we have here this internal endpoint, and the internal endpoint will allocate candidates, and these candidates will be here in the 50K port range. The other endpoint will do the same. However, if two edge servers talk to each other, we are not going to use the 50K port range as destination ports. We just use them as like a token. Yes, we have reserved UDP port 50,223, but the edge server will talk to the other edge server from port 3478 to port 3478. So you don't need to open this 50K port range if you have an AV edge server on the external firewall for this AV edge server. For TCP, it's a little bit tricky because TCP, it's not a stateless protocol. In TCP, you can have only exactly one connection from one IP address to the other IP address with the same combination of ports. So that wouldn't scale very well if two companies want to talk to each other and they can have only one connection at the same time. So we are doing here a trick. We are using different source ports. So the source port will be in the 50K port range, but the destination port will always be 443. So what does it mean? As a minimum requirement, and this is only for Skype for Business Server or Link Server 2013 or 2010, the ports are required between the AV edge server and the internet. That's what we're going to talk about here, and only for media. In the documentation, we said for a long time, 50,000 to 59,999 TCP outbound is required, and that confused a lot of people. So probably I shouldn't even bring it up. But I want to explain what we tried to say. So if you have a firewall that is based only on the destination port, and a lot of firewalls are, you just configure this destination port, then forget about the 50K port range. Not interesting. All you need to configure is you need to say, well, my AV edge service can talk to any IP. Well, because it's the internet, there are a lot of IPs, so you put in any IP. And the destination ports will be UDP 3478 or TCP 443. And for the incoming traffic, exactly the same. From wherever to the AV edge server interface, the same ports. And only if your firewall requires you to configure the source port as well, then you would do the following. Then you would say here for UDP, it's 3478 to 3478, as we have just seen in the previous slide. And for TCP, now the source port is the 50K source port, 50,000 to 59,999 going to TCP. So incoming to TCP, but coming from, coming from the 50K going to 443. Coming in, the source port could be any, because it could be a client that you're talking to, and the client is not limited to the 50K source port. It uses all of them. How does it look for Skype for Business online? So if I have online, obviously I don't have the server. So here it's super important that every client needs to be able to talk to Office 365. They need to be able, from wherever they are in your internal network, to establish connections on UDP and TCP in these ports that we are going to talk about right here. This is different to the server. In server, on the edge server, it's not workload dependent. We use the same port ranges for everything because for the server, it's just, hey, it's real-time communication. Let's get that out. In the service, we do have different ports when you look at the source ports, and the reason is we want to enable you to apply quality of service. And you can do that only if you can differentiate these packets. And by looking here at the source port, I can see here that the audio source port is 50,000 to 50,019 for audio. For video, it's 50,020 and so on, and you get the idea. And all of these clients need to be able to talk to Office 365, to the ports, TCP 443, UDP 3478, 3479, 3480, 3481, and TCP UDP 50K port range. They need to be able to talk to this port range. If you're familiar with Skype for Business and online, then you might now be a little bit confused where these ports come from, 3479, 34. 80.3481. And then if you do some tracing and you don't see them being used, you might be even more confused. Well, we are not using them yet. But we get a lot of feedback that these port requirements are complicated, that they should be simplified. So we did a first step and made them more complicated so that in an unknown point of future, we can optimize the media flows. So there's unfortunately not more information that I can share at the moment. However, if you're in the process of opening the firewall or configuring firewall rules and having these discussions, or you have customers and have these discussions, well, include these ports. Eventually, we are going to use them, and then you don't have to go back and say, well, now let's have these fun discussions again. And at the same time, our clients, we update them with Kick to Run, our service, we update that all the time when we have something new. At some point, it will light up. So let's get ready now, open these ports now that when we do, you can benefit from these changes. Hybrid. So I also said that I will be talking about hybrid. I didn't really say a lot about hybrid. But then again, I talked maybe the whole time about hybrid because hybrid means you have both. You have Office 365, some users use that, and you have the server, and other users are homed on the servers. And what you need to do, well, media connectivity works exactly the same way, but when a user is homed in on your server, wants to establish a media call, this user will talk to its Edge server. So everything that we talked about Edge server needs to be open so that this user can talk to this Edge server. Then if we're talking about the online user, well, the online user, homed online, needs to talk to Office 365. So all the ports that we talked about need to be open for that user. If you have two users, one hosted online, one hosted on-premises, on server, and they are both in their internal network, based on what we've learned today, they will still have a peer-to-peer call because they don't care where they're located. If they can establish a peer-to-peer connectivity, they will do so because in the signaling, they exchange these candidates and then they will do that. So that means also for your environment, we will keep the traffic local if we can. But you need to get sure that all the ports are open so that they can talk to their respective servers. Very important, understand the troubleshooting scenario. If two users are saying they cannot talk to each other and you have hybrid, spend some time before you start looking at the logs, sit down and understand where are these users located, where are they homed, so that you can pinpoint the problem and maybe try to reproduce that with users who are homed in a different environment. When it comes to service, there are a few do's and don'ts for service. So the do is direct connectivity required. I said that already a couple of times. But the clients, all your endpoints in your environments, they need to talk directly to Office 365 on all these ports that we have specified. Get sure that if you have any firewalls or proxies or packet shapers or any other stuff that does things to packets, that they don't interfere with the traffic. We've seen a lot of customers who had bad user experience because they had proxies, and the proxies would block all the UDP traffic, and then everything would go over TCP. TCP is not great for media. If a packet doesn't arrive, we don't want this packet to be resent. We don't want this additional delay. We want to use UDP if we can. We will use TCP if we have to, but we want to use UDP. So get sure that the firewalls are not doing that. Get sure that the firewalls are not doing some kind of deep packet inspection that might introduce delay or even worse, corrupt packets. It is UDP and TCP, and I have in the appendix there is the URL where you can find it. We have documented what IPs and FUDNs you need to open your firewall to, for Office 365. So go to this page, look at that, and then subscribe to the RSS feed so that if we change something, we add IP addresses, we add FQDNs, we remove some, we add some ports, then you are always up to date and can change your environment accordingly. So I promised that I would talk about a little bit about the 50K port range and why it's so important. So let's assume that we have here these two users. They are both external in that case. They want to do a call to each other. And let's assume, unlike Sasha and me, they cannot do a direct call. So this is blocked for some reason. So what other options do we have for the call? Well, this user is going to connect to its Edge server, allocating the candidates on port 443 TCP and 347 UDP, and will tell the other user, hey, you can try to reach me here. in the 50K port range. That's what we will see in the candidate. And this user will try to do so. And in this example, because we have the 50K port range open, fantastic, we have a call established. There's one edge server in the flow. It might also be that we go over the other edge server. So that might be different from case to case. But the point is 50K port range is open. We use one edge server. Hey, that's great. So if the port range is closed, again, Sasha and me, we try to talk to each other, but we can't for whatever reason. So I will connect to 443 TCP 3478 UDP, and then the other peer tries to connect to 50K port range, and for some reason this is blocked. It might be the firewall in front of the user, it might be the firewall in the network where the user is located, or it might be the firewall in front of the edge server, but now they cannot have this conversation, and they also cannot have this conversation. So what is going to happen is that the two edge servers will have to talk to each other. So I can still have my call, the users can still talk to each other, but now I'm wasting resources on a second edge server, I have a longer network path, I have an additional hop, all of that adds latency. And it might be that these users are part of the same company and both of these edge servers are in the same data center next to each other, but it could also be that one user is homed in Europe and one is homed in the USA, and now the traffic needs to travel around the world before it can reach its destination. So there is benefit of opening the 50K port range, even if you have the server. And if you have Office 365, really open the port range so that you can talk to your peers only using one of the AVH servers. So this is a little bit a corner case, but since I've seen it a lot, I wanted to address it as well. This is only for servers where you have an edge pool, so you have more than one pool, and you use DNS load balancing, and you use NAT. It's quite a combination, but it's something that we support. However, depending on the firewall, you might run into trouble. So we have, again, an external user and an internal user trying to talk to each other. External user talks to 443.3.478, allocates this port on the 50K port range. Internal user does the same with the other edge server. So in this example, they are load balanced to different edge servers. Obviously, this user will not talk to this edge server 50K port range because it's internal and you would block that on the firewall. So what would happen, ideally, is that this user talks here to 50K on this edge server. If that works, users will have a call and they will be happy. However, if you decide to close the 50K port range on your outer firewall, then this won't work. Or you decide to open the port range, but this user is actually sitting at a public location using a public wireless hotspot. They don't have control over that, or maybe sitting at a customer, and this network doesn't allow the user to use the 50K port range. Well, in that case, you would also not have this kind of connectivity. The challenge is that now these two edge servers need to talk to each other, and the edge server, they are not really aware of each other. They are just sending the media packets to the candidates they learned from the candidate list, and this candidate list will always be the public IP address of the edge server. So this edge server needs to send traffic outside the outer firewall to the public IP address of this edge server, and this edge server will only accept the incoming traffic if it comes from the public IP address of the other AV edge server. Otherwise, it would say, well, I don't know your IP address, that was not in the SDP, I don't know who you are, stop talking to me. So if your firewall does not allow this hairpin, then you will have dropped calls or calls that will not be established. Every other call might work because they might end up on the same edge server, or there might be in a scenario where they can talk to 50K, but you really need to enable that. Okay, bringing it together, coming back, troubleshooting. If you see the in-band provisioning without the MRAS, we did that in the beginning. If you do that, search for the MRAS, if it's not there, it means there's no AV edge configured for your server. If that happens in your server for on-premises, just fix the configuration. If that happens in Office 365, call Microsoft. If the MRAS credentials are not provided, it means the front-end server and the edge server, they cannot talk to each other. It might be FQDN DNS resolution that doesn't work. It might be a firewall. It might be routing. But you know where to look at. Again, in Office 365, it should not happen. Call Microsoft. No stun or turn candidates. So you are missing some of the reflexive candidates or some of the relay candidates. That means that your firewall has something, or there is a proxy, or there's something with the network, but it means your endpoint cannot talk to the AV Edge server, and you need to go and fix that. Finally, there's also a case that I've seen a couple of times where the reflexive candidate, sorry, where the relay candidates, the turn candidates, showed a wrong IP address. That should also happen only in server, and that would point into a wrong configuration. So when you look at these candidate lists, and then you look at the relay address, it needs to be the public IP address of the AV Edge server. If it's not the public IP address of the AV Edge server, well, then you have a problem. So, where are the logs? There it is. Sorry. These are the paths. Just download the deck. You can find them in the upcoming Mac client. There is a collect logs button in the preferences. It will create a zip file with all the logs. And then you can start up Snooper and just look at the logs. So it's different paths. We like to change that every version. But once you figure out where they are, you can just pick them up from there. These are, again, the search tips. What do you want to search on in the log? The first thing you want to do is the MRAS. Is the media relay there? Is it configured? And then you could search for A equals candidate for the candidate exchange and A equals remote candidate for the final candidates. I just search for candidate. I find all of them, but then you can go through that list. Tools, there are synthetic transactions for the server to test the connectivity. There's a so-called pre-call diagnostic tool that you just start up. It creates a call to the Edge server and will tell you what the quality is. And then I also always recommend try Telnet from the endpoint. If the endpoint is not able to connect to the AV Edge server, if you don't get any candidates, just Telnet to the FQDN that you want to connect to. You can learn that from the provisioning when you search for MRAS. It gives you this FQDN. Telnet to this FQDN, because this way you will test, can it resolve the FQDN? Does DNS work? And can it connect there? And if not, well, then somewhere is a problem. Obviously, you can do that only for TCP. We don't have a UDP telnet. But if you get TCP working, then you're halfway there. You just need to fix the UDP part. Resources, there are these office protocols that go really deep into how does this protocol works. They are not really fun to read because they are really just this technical guidance in case you would ever want to build your own client or something like that. But there are interesting nuggets in it. So if you like this kind of technical information, you can look at that. The Skype for Business debugging tools, that's where you get Snooper from. One tip, Snooper at the moment does not support to read the Mac logs. It likes to crash. We are going to update that soon, hopefully before we RTM the Mac client. But then you want to go there again and check if there's a new version. This is the URL where you find the IP address ranges and URLs for Office 365. And if you ever need to find this presentation again or want to send it to your colleagues, just go to aka.ms.avedge. At the moment, it's an older version from Link Conference, I guess. But as soon as I have time, I will point the link to this presentation. OK, so what have we learned? What the Edge server is doing, how we find the optimal media path, and how we can read these client logs. So it's interesting, hopefully. Now you understand the call logs, and now it will help you to know where to look at if you need to troubleshoot. There's the Skype for Business community. Please join that. I will try to go there from time to time and see if there are interesting questions. There is also my email address in the very beginning of the slide, zip address tbinder@microsoft.com. If you have any questions, if you want any logs to discuss, reach out. It's always fun to read these kind of logs. Please fill out your evaluations. Super important. It's the last day of the conference. It's where everyone goes down and does not fill out the evaluations. Please do that. I've done last sessions before. There's some kind of pattern. I don't know why. But usually I end up then with 5 evaluations, which is kind of frustrating. So please fill it out. And with that, thank you very much.